February 25th. When we stop fretting, when we stop fretting, we gain more ground. If we can stop trying to control everything with our minds and let it go, even for a little while, we will get a clearer view. There is wisdom in the words, "Having done all, stand. Do what can be done. Build faith. Know there is a great Holy Spirit that knows even the very smallest thing that we need. At this point, everything will challenge us. But just let it slide away. Let it dissolve from inattention. The greatest steps are taken when we decide not to thrash out, not to hate and resent, and lose ourselves in the confusion. Put it all down and walk away to something totally different. Having done all, stand and refuse to be drawn back into a place of no peace. The man who sat on the ground in his teepee meditating on life and its meaning, accepting the kinship of all creatures and acknowledging unity with the universe of things, was infusing into his being the true essence of civilization. Chief Luther standing there. Let's do 10 minutes. Or what do we do?
Let's just do 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Let's do 2 minutes meditation.
Serenity prayer.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All hearts and minds are clear. So we're going to wrap up a weekend. We have covered 9 steps. We've covered the first 3 steps, which are inner concession steps. Step 1, I have a problem. What that problem is, as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the problem centering around the allergy, my body, the mental obsession, my mind, and a spiritual separation from the power that created me. I've been awakened to the fact if I do what those have done before me, if I treat my body, if I treat my mind, if I treat my spirit, I can recover. Very simple deal, not complicated. We tend to let our minds become involved, and it takes us from where we need to be. So I've conceded to my innermost self there's something wrong. What they do for me in this spiritual process is they give me a solution in step 2. They have me look at my God consciousness. Is it sufficient to do the job that needs to be done in my body, my mind, and my spirit? I can believe that, or I can have a willingness to believe. And I get a willingness to believe because I've seen it done in other people. Catapults me into a place of, would you like to make a decision that you will turn your life and your will over to what can fix you or heal you? Total healing, not a band-aid, total healing. If I decide to do that and I do that, I set off on a course of action, steps 4 through 9, which confirms the fact of, God, I'm willing for you to take all of me and change me, recreate me. I write inventory. I sit with somebody and expose myself. I look at what's blocked me from God and my defects and aspects and shortcomings. I make a list of persons I have harmed, and I go out into the world. And I do whatever I can do to clean up my messes. It leaves me with an intent in the 9th step on page 77. Top of the page, it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. And I begin to see that everything that I've done up to this point has nothing to do with me. It's not about what I'll gain. I lose interest in my life. I realize what I've been given is a gift from a power greater than myself, and I begin to tap into power. I like to call it the anointing. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's 3 places which talks about what begins to happen in step 10. On page 8, paragraph 2, lines 4 through 6, the end of Bill's story, first 8 pages, which talks about Bill's drinking. He says, I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension. Fourth dimension is spirit world of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. I can attest to that. Page 83. Paragraph 2, lines 1 and 2. The spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. And page 84, paragraph 2, line 3. We have entered the world of the spirit. So they begin to align me with what needs to happen for who? Who?
The mad dog.
Thank you. Who said that?
Me.
You're awake. Right. The mad dog. It don't have to happen for everybody. And it don't have to happen for the mad dog. He can settle for a Band-Aid. But do you want a healing? What's happened for me is a result of being catapulted into the fourth dimension and embracing that, something's happened with my life. And what's happened is I get to hang out with God in a number of ways. I get to hang out with God when I sit across the table and I look you eyeball to eyeball and I see the manifestation of change that happens in your life. And I see my God consciousness awaken in me, which awakens it in you. And I don't lose focus of the fact that it has nothing to do with me. I'm just an instrument. What I begin to realize is that it's real. You hear in the fellowship, and I've talked a lot about, not a lot, but a few things. You haven't heard all of them. Mike D stuff, right? And you're hearing the fellowship that steps 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. Well, if I could maintain anything, I probably wouldn't be here. I started trying to maintain at the age of 19. Didn't work. Synanon gave me some very good stuff about how to control and manage my life and maintain my life. I did not have the power to do that. What step 10, which I'm going to talk about, and T is going to talk about 11, but what both of those steps did for me, it showed me how to live in spirit world. As a result of that sentence, on page 84, that second paragraph, and that fourth sentence, I have entered the world of the spirit. In that next sentence, they give me my intent for step 10. And living in spirit world is about growing in understanding and effectiveness. Understanding of what? First, understanding of me. And then understanding of you. And it goes on to, in step 10, to point out some spiritual exercises that begin to relieve me of me and my humanness and my selfishness. And actually what step 10 does, it gets me to practice everything I've been given from 1 to 10. Steps 1 to 9. They give me an inventory process that I can do on a consistent basis throughout the day. They tell me to continue to watch. It's an exercise. And why do they want me to watch? They want me to watch for me. Because I'm going to show up again. I'm going to show up in selfishness. I'm going to show up in dishonesty. I'm going to show up in resentment. And I'm going to show up in fear. And when that shows up, I'm blocked from you. There's a purpose to why we do that. We'll talk about 12 a little later, but there's a purpose why we do 1 through 11. Very simple deal. I've talked about simplicity all week long. All week. All weekend long. Very simple deal. For me, there's only one reason why I've been kept alive. And it's a joy and a passion. It's to be here for you. If you want my help. If you really want my help. To be coupled with that is the fact of I'm here for the mad dog. Because for the mad dog, this is the last house on the block for you. If you like me, you've tried everything else. You've done church. You've done relationships. You've done marriages. You've done money. You've done geographics, you've done jobs, you've done dogs, you've done cats, you've done children. You've done everything to try to fix what was wrong with you. Even if it worked for a while, it did not suffice. It did not sustain you. Once I got introduced to this process and these steps of evolution that changed my life, something happened. I began to do what I set out to do in step two. Cultivate a relationship with a power greater than myself that continues to do for me what I cannot do for myself. It comes as a result of practice. It comes as a result of discipline. It comes as a result of me turning out of me. It comes as a result of me being there for you. It comes as a result of me doing what I don't want to do. It comes as a result of me standing when I don't want to stand. It comes as a result of me loving and caring when I don't really want to love and care, because I think you are the problem. As long as you're the problem, I'm in trouble. So I'm quite grateful for these last three steps, man. I call it the milk and honey of recovery. The milk and honey, you've heard that before. Honey is very sweet and milk is very nourishing. And I get to shed me even more, and in shedding me, I get to hang out with God in God's world. And they give me stuff all through the 10th step that I can do to get aligned with who God would have me to be. And again, if you purchase or donate it for the workbook, spiritual exercises, continue to watch. They give me a code in that first paragraph, love and tolerance of others. Cease fighting. Again, if you like me, and that's one of the attractions of recovery, you'll meet somebody in the rooms, or you're beginning to hang out with people, or you'll get a sponsor, and you'll see that you probably selected that sponsor because you're somewhat like that person. If you like me, you've probably been fighting the majority of your life until you got here, in all different kinds of ways. One of the main ways, and the reason why I fought, was to have control. And that control was out of a fear that if I didn't get what I thought I needed, or if I lost what I thought I had, I would die. So I get to see that if I relinquish that, and consistently give my life over to the care of God, something happens with me living in this physical existence. I get to shed physical and I get to take on spiritual. Safe and protected. It says clocks and watches in your workbook. Clocks and watches is wake up in the morning, don't wake up to an alarm clock, don't put a watch on all day, don't look at a clock, pray and ask God in the morning, get me to where I need to go, take me through my day. See how much faith you have in God being able to do that. Safe and protected. Vision of God's will in your life. God has a plan for you. I'm a firm believer that you didn't happen up on us this weekend by accident. It was part of God's plan for you. In whatever you got from this, if it's been for the betterment of your life, or if it's been for you to develop more resentment, more fear, more anger, whatever, still God's plan for you. Remember, we talked about God is either everything or he's nothing. And even in the nothingness, God is there. So I get to work with God through these spiritual exercises in step 10. Proper use of the will, standing in front of the will. A vision for my life. The vision of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. I actually get to do vision work. I go in a little bit deep and I ask God to show me what's the plan for my life that you've designed. And he does exactly that. So it's work to be done. It's just not an inventory step like you hear so many times. Tenth step is about writing inventory. You don't always have to write inventory. That first paragraph will allow you to walk through a resentment or walk through a fear. Move through it in your head and come out free on the other side without ever putting it on paper. I very seldom write inventory now unless I'm in a piece of work. Why? Because I can't stand to stay stuck in resentment. And if I move through it in my head and it's not resolved, I got people that I'm accountable to. It says in that first paragraph, discuss it with someone immediately. So that's what I do. I call my sponsor. Or I'll call Kev. Or I'll call Greg. And I'll say, this is what's happening, man. What do you think? If I have an intuitive thought that I'm not clear that it's a direction from God or an answer to a problem or an experience, here we go. I don't have problems anymore. I have experiences. They're put there purposely to help me to grow, move deeper into aligning myself with God. I get confirmation. And it fascinates me. It fascinates me how I'll get a thought or I'll be in an experience and I'll be somewhat unsure. And somebody will say something, or I'll read something, or I'll see something that confirms the truth that I need to hear and I need to know. It lets me know God is working and God is real. I need that. I need to know that God will do exactly what he said in the third step. I'll be your father, your director, your principal, your new employer. So do I rely on that perfectly now? No. But it's gotten a lot better since when I first got here. That recovery hospital I work in Vegas, they don't employ me. I tell the clients that all the time. I don't work for American Addiction Society. I work for God. I'm not here really to pick up a paycheck. That's part of the benefits. But the main reason why I'm here is to say to somebody this morning, you don't ever have to come back here again. You don't ever have to pick up again. You don't ever have to use again if you don't want to. That warning has to be followed with a desire, and that desire has to be followed with action. Faith without works is dead. So I got to get my feet moving. And I got to keep them moving. We don't have the luxury of siestas and vacations. We don't get timeouts. We take them. And when we take them, what usually happens? Internally, I suffer. I disconnect from the power. I get restless. I get irritable, I get discontent, I get full of fear, I get insecure, I get lonely, I get loveless, I get careless. Life consumes me, and the gift that's been given to me, I lose it. Because I make a conscious decision to live in humanness. And it damn near killed me. I don't know about you. So I don't do it perfectly, but here's the blessing of recovery for me. When I'm in it, that voice that spoke to me all my life speaks. And says, so you want to hang out with your buddy again, huh? My buddy is Heron. No? Oh, well, if you don't, you need to do something different. Because it's about Heron. What's the difference, Mike? Heron don't come at me like Heron anymore. Comes at me dressed up. Comes dressed up from page 18. I start touching shit and it starts dissolving and turning to mush. I begin to have trouble with personal relationships. Can't control my emotional nature. Wake up in the morning and ain't got no reason in the world to be miserable, and I'm miserable. That's an internal condition. Pray to misery and depression. I believe depression is a spiritual illness. Some people need medication, but not everybody. Twice in recovery, I've had to be put on depression meds. Twice, Spirit let me take it for a couple of times and said, okay, you don't need that shit no more. Stop taking it. And it worked out fine. You're not me. If you're on it and you need it, take it as prescribed. But work with Spirit and see what happens. He's capable. That little place I hung out in for the first year, couple years of my life, said he's a doctor that never lost a case. Bunch of stuff that I need to gravitate to and take on as a way of living and thinking. When I transcend and become transformed, and I begin to hang out with God. For me, it's totally about relinquishing control. I don't want to run nothing. Nothing. And I don't want to know nothing. Anytime I talk, anything I bring something out here, it's in an effort to help somebody else. That's it. Gets me in trouble. So 10th step, real meaty, juicy stuff. I love vision work. I love it. Because I get to see God at work. And I'll be driving down the street. I've done it a bunch of times now. It's stuff I do with my people. And I'll drive down the street and I'll see something and it'll catch my attention. And I write it down. Just bits and words and pieces. And I'll do that for a while. And then I'll take that and formulate it into a vision. It's directed by God. Awesome experience. The meat, the milk and honey of my life, hanging out with God. Talks about proper use of the will. The problem being removed. What's the problem? What's the problem? Huh? Yeah, what's the problem? What's the problem? Huh? 45, top of the page. Lack of? Thank you. Thank you. Lack of power. What is this about?
Power.
Power what? This is about what? The process of recovery is about what? The acquisition of power. I need power to live. I need power to transcend everyday obstacles and blockages. I need power to guide and direct me mentally, physically, and spiritually. I need to be brainwashed. Because if you're sitting here this morning, probably the way you work, the way you live, don't work on some level. So I'm still on a quest. Still on a quest. Fill me up, Father, as much as you can with your power. But keep me awake and alert to the fact of it's your power and not the delusion that I have anything to do with it. Keep me safe and protected in my body, my mind, and my spirit. and I get to live a life beyond my wildest dreams. Wildest dreams. Ask yourself a question. Have you entered the world of the Spirit? How many people here have completed nine? Completed nine. Did all your every single amends? How many? Let me see. Every single amend. Any amends that you have can be made. It says successful consummation of these steps. It means to finish. Some of them you can't make face to face. Some of them you can't make because you'll create more harm. But there's a way to make them. And willingness is the key. I've completed amends several times. And I look at my life and it blows me away. And I'm not talking about out here. I'm talking about in here. The peace and the serenity and the being still and the non-judgment of others blows me away. The shedding of wanting to be in control and run stuff and top dog numero uno, the stuff that I grew up with, blows me away as a result of this stuff. So I get to learn about God in the 10th step by doing spiritual practices, prayer and meditation, reading books, listening to CDs, hearing speakers that are in the club. Everybody can't hold my attention. Everybody don't say what I need to hear. That don't mean it's not good for somebody else. It's just not my people. Very spoiled in recovery, my lineage. Very particular. Very specific. And it's okay. If what you're doing works, do it. But do something. Especially if you're what? Mad dog. Do something. Do something. Don't sit around. So 10 step meaty, juicy stuff. 10 step promises. Throughout the 10th step, we talked about each step having promises. We cease fighting anybody or anything. Sanity returning. Seldom interested in liquor or heroin or cocaine. If tempted, recalling from a hot, like a hot flame. All promises. React sanely and normally. I get to think again, constructively, instead of thinking the way that tears my life up and twists it upside down. And we look up and we just begin doing it. It's an automatic deal. It's a gift. God gives us a gift. He gives it to us. Why? Because He loves us. He wants us back home with Him. New attitude. Requiring no effort. It just comes. New attitude towards you. New attitude towards life. New attitude towards a whole bunch of things. Placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I don't have to worry about fighting no more. God fights my battles. Actually, in my other deal that I do, I do work with saints. Saints have a very specific, interesting place in the universe, and they have a purpose. And I use them. We haven't sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. What's the problem?
Power.
Lack of power. So if the problem has been removed, what does that mean?
Power.
I get power back. Exactly. I get to leave, I get to live, and I get to breathe. And I get to breathe comfortably. And not worry about the next moment. I get to live in the moment, not regretful of what happened yesterday and not worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. Because I ain't got no control over it anyway. I'm going to turn it over to Eric for step 11.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm Tarek. I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hey, Eric.
You know, in the first step, we looked at self-examination. Then we turned to God in the second step. I believe we turned to our fellows in the third step because the third step compels us to testify. God does something miraculous in our personal life, and we want to share it. And we do that through testimony. And that's part of what Mike and I have been doing this weekend. And in the fourth, fifth, and sixth step, you're back in self-examination. In step seven, you're turning back to God. In steps eight and nine, you're connecting with your fellows again. The tenth step that Mike just described is all about self-examination as you walk through the day and you interact with God and you interact with God's creations. And now I'm going to talk about the 11th step where we turn back to God. And so at the bottom of page 85, it says step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if you have the proper attitude and you work at it. Now, the attitude on page 55, second to last paragraph, they described it. The attitude we have to carry into these spiritual practices is we have to set aside our prejudices about prayer and meditation and anything we think we know about it. We have to think honestly about what we're about to do and the practices we're about to engage. And then we have to search diligently within ourselves. To me, that says you have to bring your heart into the practice. One of my teachers has always taught me that any dogmatic, rigid doctrine will stunt my spiritual growth. And I believed it. I still believe it to this day. He also talks about human development. You know, in the early years, so much of our existence was about being power-driven, instinctive, and unthinking. We didn't play out consequences at all. And for most alcoholics and addicts, I think we get stuck in that phase of development. And then we enter into this blaming sense of self. And I don't mean blaming in a bad way. We begin to develop a conscience, which for some of us leads to a great deal of guilt and regret and remorse and shame. And then as we start to wake up, our spirit begins to wake up, we enter this phase of development called the inspired sense of self. We begin to open ourselves up to intuition. In the 10th step, they call it God consciousness or our sixth sense. And we begin to be curious about creative exploration. And that goes to a line that's in our big book at the bottom of page 87. It says, be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And that's what I've done, and that's what my teachers have encouraged me to do. So I've done a lot of things along with the 12 steps. Never instead of the 12 steps in this big book. I have a spiritual teacher who is someone I spend time with who is another sponsor, so to speak, but he's much more than that. And I do a lot of work with him along with this work. It's not instead of this work. And for the early years of my recovery, I used to read pages 86 to 88 every morning. I do the Upon Awakening, and I would use the book as an outline for my day. And then later that morphed into, instead of upon awakening reading it, I would invite God into my life and I'd ask God to help me consider my plans for the day and how I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And I'd ask, you know, God, please divorce my thoughts. So I went from reading the pages to having a conversational dialogue with God. And for years, I wrote out the evening review. So a lot of people think step 10 is about writing inventory. I don't think it is. Step 10 is a walking around inventory of yourself as you interact with God's kids. That's my opinion on that. This, when we retire at night, the inventory at the end of the day. Was I resentful today? Was I selfish? Was I dishonest? Do I owe an apology? If I kept something to myself that I should be discussed with another person? Those are reflection questions. And then somewhere around the two-year mark, I began incorporating pages 84 to 88. So not only was I doing the prayer meditation piece, I incorporated the 10th step. And in the 12 and 12, Bill talks about it. He says that prayer by itself is amazing. Meditation by itself is amazing. Prayer and meditation together are incredible. But then he makes a statement about prayer, meditation, and inventory at the same time. And to me, that's what the 10th step is. I am examining myself as I walk through the day. I wake up. It's how I stay awake. It's how I stay awake with an intent to have a dialogue with God as I walk through the day. I sense the presence if I engage in this practice of watch, ask, turn, cease fighting, practice Dakota love and tolerance, and so forth. But recently, it's been brought to my attention that prayer without the presence of the heart might be invalid, and prayer without knowledge is invalid. So there's a question. You know, how do I tap my heart, and what knowledge are they talking about? Why are we praying? Knowledge of why I am praying. And for me, this is just for me, my prayer life has to do with reverence. And the word reverence means respect. And I have a great deal of respect for this power that wakes me up every day and provides me with the same degree of willingness. I don't claim the willingness that I have. That is a gift that I have. And because of that, I'm very knowledgeable and present to what I am doing when I am attempting to spend time in a devotional. I had a guy that I sponsor called me up about 6 weeks ago, and he was telling me he didn't get to connect today. He didn't get to do his prayer and meditation, and so he's had a bad day. And I said, let me get this right. So you only pray and meditate so you don't struggle throughout the course of the day? And he paused and he was silent. He goes, well, hell, when you put it that way. I said, have you ever considered that the prayer meditation is for God and not for you? Completely changed his perspective about it. I know a lot of people that do that. You hear it in meetings all the time. I didn't get to pray and meditate today. My day was screwed up. That's just not the way I look at it. So I try to make myself available to the presence of God, and I cultivate an expectancy of God being there, which I think is an important part of this practice. It's interesting, once you relax some rigid ideas, this is what I had to do, I was able to investigate more, and I was able to move past them into a new realm. And but this, it required something. And this is all it requires. This is called practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you have won. If you're lazy and you don't practice, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, and sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is pray, then pray every day. If it's meditation, then meditate every day. If it's exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you are truly practicing some form of spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just a practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum and traction that it has given you? So, my willingness, which I'm not claiming, to practice these disciplines of meditation and prayer and vision, provided me the capacity on two certain occasions in my life to do something that required what we call a leap of faith. So back in 2015, I went to my employer and asked for a raise. And they turned me down. And I developed a resentment. And I, a few months later, I began to work on a business plan for opening my own business. And my background is finance, and you know, I've got a master's degree in management and leadership and, you know, strategic planning, and so this is what I'm good at. And so I put together a professional business plan and had everything in it, and I started shopping it around to investors. And I found an investor, and I signed a letter of intent. I want to say it's around June of 2015. Well, I knew come December 31st I was done at that job, and I've been with this company for 6 years. And so mentally I began to check out a little bit. And in August, it was late August, September, the timing's a little hazy, but you know, I began to show in my the way I was acting at work, I think people started to see something was off. I wasn't as engaged. And they would do these strategic quarterly meetings, and they'd put up these five-year plans. And it always would show me growing with the company and taking over a new district and a new territory. And I'm sitting in these meetings, and I'm beginning to live a double life. I begin to feel the ingenuineness of my behavior. I'm becoming a liar. Right, I'm nodding my head as they're telling me where I'm going to be with the company, and I'm inside, I know I'm not going to be there. It's hard for someone that's trying to live the way of life described in this big book. And so in September, my VP and I were in his office, and he finally, you know, and my spiritual teacher said, Tarek, because of the way you live, eventually you're going to be compelled to be honest. And I said, you know what, I don't think I'm going to tell them, because they could get upset and make me leave. And I just, my wife and I just bought this huge house, huge mortgage payment. There's no way I'm jeopardizing my livelihood until I have to. Right? I'll give them my 2 week notice. He's like, no, you're going to tell them way before then. I was like, I'm not going to. And I'm sitting in my VP's office, and he says, what is wrong with you? I can tell something's off. And for whatever reason, I was compelled. There was no talking myself out of it. I just told him the truth. And he wasn't upset. Completely didn't turn out the way I thought it was going to be. And as I was walking out of his office that day, he goes, hey, before you make a final decision, why don't you tell me what number it's going to take to keep you here? And I was like, what? And I was like, if you would have done this back in February, we wouldn't even be sitting here. And I ignored it. I went home that weekend and didn't do anything with it. And he had the first week in October, he had his executive management team meeting up in Illinois. And he comes into my office on a Friday, and he says, look, over the weekend, I need you to do something. I leave Tuesday morning. I want you to create your dream job description with this company and whatever money you want to make. I want to take this up to the CEO and see if I can create this job for you. And so I took that weekend, and I created it, and I put some ridiculous amount of money on it just to see if they would do it. And he comes back, and they gave it to me. More money than I had ever made, and a promotion, and then it began, because I'd already signed that letter of intent with the investor. And so I began to pray, and I would ask God for clarity and guidance, and nothing would come. I had my dream of opening this recovery center, and then on the other hand, I had more money than I'd ever seen with a daughter and a wife and all the bells and whistles that come with the family. And so I started really reaching a place of indecision. And you know, my teachers have always told me, when you don't know what to do, don't do anything. Okay. So I wasn't doing anything, and we were getting closer and closer. And so one morning, I'll never forget it, I was working from home this morning. So the hardest thing about trusting God, everyone, is trusting God. Yeah. And so that morning, my prayer changed. This is the first morning I changed my prayer. I said, God, please make it obvious to me which way I need to go. And so I come out of my meditation room. Marcy and Callie have already left for the day. And at this point, Callie, my stepdaughter, likes to draw, and she leaves her drawings all over the house. So I go downstairs. I go into the den on the coffee table. There's a drawing that I still have framed on my desk. It has a red box on it with two stars, and in the middle of the red box it says, "Follow your dream." And so I had just said this prayer, and this is the first thing I see after the prayer. And so Callie gets home from school that day, and I said, "Hey, why did you draw this?" She goes, "I don't know. I was supposed to draw that today." And I made my decision based on that. Okay? This is really... once you cultivate these things, these practices, you will do what Mike was describing about driving down the road and just being moved to write something down and piecing it all together later and just seeing what it is. I think that's available to everybody sitting in this room. I'm not special. I just, you know, they call it a leap of faith for a reason. And it solidifies my relationship with my Creator when I do things like that. You know? It moves me from self-reliance to God-reliance, from my reasoning mind being God. And so last year, I was losing my father. He was dying from liver cancer. I was taking care of him, and my brother and I have been estranged for the better part of 20 years. And it was one of the situations where my brother would show up and I would leave. And when I would show up to hang out with my dad, my brother would leave. And there were so many miraculous events that took place around this. Like, my mom and dad were divorced. My mom moved my dad into her guest apartment for me to take care of my dad there. And my stepdad helped me take care of my dad. And so these were just things that reaffirmed my trust in God. Because that doesn't happen very often, if ever. And so my spiritual teacher said, your job with your father is to witness. We use the word watch. He said, what we humans think death is not. We have no idea what it is. It's only for that human and his Creator, and they have an experience. And your job is to just witness. So he had instructed me to meditate. I practiced with prayer beads. He said, I want you to use your prayer beads. I want you to read scriptures. I want you to play music. And I just want you to watch. And that's what I did as my father made his transition. And my father and I were done. I mean, we were complete. Like, my dad, I think I said at some point over the weekend, I didn't know my dad until I got clean, really. And I built my relationship with my father. So as I was rubbing my dad's head and sitting by his side, I would whisper in his ear that we were complete and we were good, and he could go on when he could move on whenever he wanted to. And throughout that 2-week period, my mom would come to me and say, "You know, you need to reconcile with your father or with your brother before your father goes." And I said, "No, he didn't lift a finger to help me. I took him to all the chemo. Brother didn't help. It was a chore to get him to come to the hospital. You could tell it was an inconvenience." And I was like, "Look, he's a piece of shit and I don't want him in my life." Right? This is what I said to my mom. And then my mom would break down and cry. So something started to tug at my heart, because I was whispering in my dad's ear, and it was very self-centered dialogue I was having with my dad. It only had to do with me and my dad. And so the Wednesday night before my dad passed, at 2 a.m, they called everybody over to the house, and they thought he was going to pass that night. And so I had one hand, my brother had another hand, and I watched my brother break down. It was the first time I've watched my brother break down in years. And he and my dad did not have a good relationship. And the next 2 days, I saw my brother break down again. And something in my heart just loosened up. Like this immense sadness of all this pain I'd been carrying that was being directed at my brother as anger just went away. And this healing began to happen. Now, I think this experience was brought into my life as a result of the practice. I'm convinced of it. The practice, the practice, the practice. Prayer, meditation, vision, continued work with it. I trust intuition. I trust the presence. And so on Saturday afternoon, I go over to see my dad and spend some time with him. And this is, he's at the end, and I know him. And the voice spoke. Spirit spoke to me. Spirit said, it's time to tell your father you're going to take care. You're going to be your brother's keeper. And my dad was struggling, and I leaned over and I was rubbing his head and I whispered in his ear. And my mom was standing right there. And I whispered in his ear and I said, I will take care of Chad. Don't worry. I got him. And he looked up and took his last breath and he passed away. And my mom almost fell out because she knew what was happening. And if I had not cultivated this practice, I would have never had access to that. Would never have had access to that. I mean, these steps are magical. This work is magical. And I think with this work, we get to access the fourth dimension. That this stuff I just described to you, that's fourth dimension stuff. That's spirit world stuff. Right? But our thinking mind gets in the way of all of this. Because what's going to happen is, in my opinion, based on what I've been through, if I have not cultivated these practices along with the next step we're going to talk about here, I won't make it through a dark night of the soul. Okay? That experience, I mean, I love, my wife asked me to move out at the same time that experience was going on with my father. That all happened at the same time. And it was a dark night. And let's give a description to this dark night. The dark night descends on a soul when all other things have failed. When you are no longer the best meditator in the class because your meditation produces absolutely nothing. When your prayer evaporates on your tongue and you have nothing left to say to God. When you're not even tempted to return to a life of worldly pleasure. Because the world has proven empty, and yet taking another step through the void of the spiritual life seems futile because you are no good at it. And it seems as if God has given up on you. You can scarcely conjure up your old passion for Him. It has become clear that you're unable to do anything on your own to remedy your spiritual brokenness. And so although I'm describing a very spiritual experience to all of you, over that month-long period, there are a lot of times where I felt abandoned by God. But yet something kept pulling me back to God. It was amazing that I wasn't abandoning. I don't even think I had a choice to abandon. But I kept being pulled back to God in the middle of all this. You know, I remember the day I packed my bags and I tried to get out of the house before my stepdaughter got home. And I'm literally walking out the door with the bags and she gets home. So I have to look at this little girl and lie to her and tell her I'm just going away for a couple of days. And I felt anger towards God why I was in this situation. But yet that night I dropped to my knees and I'm just communicating in a very sincere way with my Creator. Asking Him for safety. Asking Him for sanctuary. Because sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, the only place I feel safe and secure in what I call a sanctuary is in my prayer and meditation practice with God. I don't feel safe out in that world a lot of the time. But I feel safe in my relationship with God. Oh, no, it's with me all the time. But there has to be a retreat. Like, retreat is a vital part of this. I have to retreat so I can re-engage life. And that's what these steps have given to me, especially steps 10 and 11. I mean, Mark used to say, this is the juice. Steps 10 and 11 are the language of the heart. They are the language of the heart. And so what we can access through these steps is amazing. I share those experiences with you because the dark night and the struggles are coming for every one of us in this room. Remember, on page 14, bottom, Bill says, if Tarek fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he will not survive the certain trials and those spots ahead. When I pray and meditate, there is a sacrifice that goes on here. Because I'd rather binge watch Netflix sometimes.
Yeah. Peaky Blinders.
Oh, yeah. Yes. But the sacrifice, there's a sacrifice here, folks, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to talk about I guess, the ultimate sacrifice here in the next step. So, we're going to turn it back over to Mike. We've got 30 more minutes. We're going to wrap up this 12th step.
Thanks, Jared.
Mm-hmm. And then see what's in store. The ultimate sacrifice. Moving from selfish to selfless. Moving from selfish to selfless. Soul food. One of the authors in here asked some little kids a question: how were people created? And one little kid, Bryce, who was 7 years old, said, "I don't know how they were created, but I know why. To be God's friends." And I believe we do everything we do in 1 through 11 to be agents for God, to carry a message as a result of a spiritual awakening, as a result of the first 11 steps. My spirit is awakened to there's more in the universe and to the universe than me. If you're like me, you lived the majority of your life where the world revolved around you. Well, probably somebody in here today that still believes the world revolves around them. But once you can break through that shell and believe and begin to practice being there for others, something miraculous happens. But I have to get the freedom to do that. And the first 11 steps frees you up to do that. Then the first 11 steps gives you the power to do what we were created to do: to help people get on a path back to the Father, back to God. It was expressed to me in my very first piece of work that step 12 is about hooking people to do the work. And that's exactly what it did for me, that first piece of work. I talked to you a little bit about the 9th step and how it hooked me the same way Heron did. And there's a joy and an experience when you sit down with somebody or you do something like this or you share in a meeting or you become a part of a home group. There's a joy and an experience in that there's like none other when you become a part of something. Again, if you're like me, you've probably been a loner the majority of your life. Didn't want nobody around. Didn't want to share nothing with nobody. Made sure you had what you needed and wasn't worried about whether they had what they needed. This becomes a journey of sharing. A journey of having hooked up with God in friendship and partnership, companionship in the 3rd step, backing up that decision with action to say, "I'm serious about wanting to hang out with you, man. If it doesn't happen, I'm doomed. I'm going to do what I do." And I have to stay crystal clear to the fact of dying doesn't mean physically all the time. Doesn't mean you have to leave this physical body and be put 6 feet under in some dirt. You can walk around on 2 feet every day doing what you do and be a dead man or a dead woman. No life. No spirit, no joy, no peace, no serenity. If you're like me, I lived like that for a very long time. In the beginning, Heron was my buddy. Heron brought me peace. Heron brought me joy. Heron brought me laughter. Heron took care of me. And then it turned on me. I need something to happen, or something to have happened on the same level that would happen with Heron happened. And that's what happens here. I abandoned myself to God, and I abandoned myself to direction from another physical individual who I am, by the way, thoroughly convinced the power of God is moving through them, and I begin to experience recreation of life. And I begin to believe, as a result of being willing to believe, that transformation can happen for me. I don't have to die the way I thought I was going to die. That last treatment program I went in, I was dying with a spike in my neck or in my hand, on a rooftop or in a basement. That was my destiny. I went in that last treatment program because I caught a case, not because I was thoroughly convinced that my life, run on my will, was headed for utter disaster. I wasn't thoroughly convinced that I had to be removed from using any mind-altering anything. And a miracle happened. I look for miracles. I look for God to show up in the least likely places. So being catapulted into the fourth dimension of existence, learning how to live in the spirit world, embracing the fourth dimension allows me to relinquish this out here and begin to live from this in here, from my spirit, and move from being a taker to a giver. And my life just blows up. And it amazes me. People call from all around the world and ask me to come places to do shit. Me. A dope fiend stuck in four blocks for 20-something years and could not move. And there were several days I wanted to get past 116th Street and 8th Avenue. And I couldn't. Because I didn't have enough Heron in me to allow me to move. And I wanted to so bad. That first treatment program, I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what. God loved me, and God graced me, and God kept speaking to me, and God kept directing me, whether I listened or not, until I got to you guys. And I got to this book. And became willing to get on a path back to him. And in doing that, he welcomed me back home like the prodigal son. Anybody know the story of the prodigal son? Who left his father. And his father gave him all his riches. And he went out and went into the world. And basically, long story short, he became a disaster. The prodigal son. And when he got back home, his father didn't turn him away. His father welcomed him with open arms. That's what happens here. Until you get on a path and you do some work, or you let the work do you, and you begin to cultivate that relationship with a power greater than yourself, we welcome you back home. Welcome to Cocaine Anonymous. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. Welcome. We're glad you're here. But now that you're here, get busy. A couple people talked about pink clouds. They told me don't ride no pink clouds. Get busy. Get a sponsor. at that time it was do the work, be of service, show up. And I did it. Watch your life be transformed. I was willing to believe. Because I had shot dope for so long that I was entrenched in the belief that I'm dying from this. My brother did. David Johnson, they stabbed him up in a hallway. Kenny Bione, they throw him off the roof, 5-story building. Wardron, they blew his head off in the middle of the street with a shotgun. Junior Johnson, in and out of the penitentiary all his life, from the age of 13 until now. Why should it be any different for me? It got smashed. All of that. The mindset got smashed. Got what? Got washed away. Brainwashed. So what I do now is I get to tell somebody about that who's in a mindset that they're dying from this disease, clean and sober. You ain't using. And death is an option for you because you're miserable. You ain't done no work. You don't have a sponsor. But you got a sponsor, or you got a sponsor you don't trust. If you got a sponsor you don't trust, you don't need to have a sponsor. If you can't be totally transparent with that sponsor, you don't need to have it. But I get the keys to the kingdom when I do the word. Well, I get the keys to the kingdom when I let the word do me. And that's what I do. I don't run no more. I used to boost, and I'd go in the store, and when I got what I needed, I'd try to get out of there as fast as I could. And then if I made it through the door, my steps got even a little bit faster. I got in the door here, and I got what I needed to take care of me. And I don't run to get away. I stay to give it back. And it's a blessing and a miracle in that. 12-step talks about it in the very beginning. 12-step promises. It says, life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. Frequent contact with newcomers. Somebody's got to be here when they come, man. Somebody's got to be here properly armed with facts about themselves. To be a teacher. To be a guide. To be an angel. Somebody's got to be here. I get prepped for that and I get suited up and armored for that as a result of all 12 steps. And I look up and I'm a new creature created by a God of my own understanding, which don't have to be like yours. Which don't have to be like yours, which don't have to be like yours, don't have to be like yours. I can have my own personal understanding and relationship with God. What a beautiful thing. The only place a Buddhist, a Catholic, a Muslim, an atheist, a Christian,
a Jew,
can all get together and say thank you, Father, for what you've done. Thank you for the blessings that you've bestowed on my life. And worship Him in whatever way you like. But then you come back here and you tell somebody about it. Because you're the only one that can touch that particular person in the room. We all have jobs. T touches people that I can't touch. I touch people that you can't touch. But the deal is that we get anointed to touch. And it's a result of the 12-step process. I get an anointing. We talked about a crowning in the third step. In step 12, I get an anointing. I get to go out and tell how good he's been and how miraculous my life has turned out to be from an utter disaster. Sitting at the table with a gentleman this morning, and he said, I lost everything. I lost everything, but I persevered through, and I stayed, and now I got what I need to live. Everybody don't get that blessing. He also talked about a gentleman that couldn't get it and died from this disease. We've talked about all weekend people dying. But we can be the difference with that. Some will listen, some won't listen. Becomes my responsibility, though, to carry the message. What's the message? You can recover. That's simple. You can recover. God is. Do you need him? They might not need him. We talked about the poopy, didn't we? Poopy don't need him. Poopy can do it on his own power. He's still doing it. He's happy, joyous, and free. Dollar to a donut, y'all know a couple of them. Ain't never worked a step in their life. Refuses to get a sponsor. Is a raging bull in meetings. It's a guy in L.A., 30-something years clean. Don't talk about the big book, because if you do, he's coming behind you and cut you down. I talk about it anyway. Stand for something. Stand for something or fall for anything. So I get purpose. I get a new life, man. Back in the 12 step, it says, burn the consciousness in every man that all he's got to do is clean house. What does it say? Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Page 98. Trust in God and clean house. Get a God of your own understanding. Be willing to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. Step 12 shows you, as outlined in the book, in those pages, working with others. It'll show you how to work with people and sponsor people. Get busy. Get busy. Those of you that are in Cocaine Anonymous, we need you. We're 30-something years old, but we're still a brand new fellowship compared to AA and NA. Brand new. We need you on the front line. We need you to get a coffee pot and a big book and start a meeting. Start a meeting. Start a women's meeting. Start a men's staff. We need you. Support your conventions. Support your meetings. Those of you that don't do CA, go hang out and see what CA is about, especially if you're at it. If you're not at it, and you're hanging out in AA, if you're not alcoholic and you're hanging out in AA, we talked about it. Alcoholics Anonymous is for singleness of purpose. It's for alcoholics. Just try it. See when you go if you identify. You might find the fellowship that you crave. Then if you don't, create it. If I go somewhere and there's no CA and I go there to live, I start a meeting. If I go there and there is CA, I become of service. Spoke about it early in this retreat, man. I do my recovery the same way I did 2-3 years clean. Ain't nothing changed. Why? Because Heron's looking for me. Looking for me. He'd love to have my ass now. They'd talk about me like a dog in fellowship. I told you that goddamn Mike D was a hypocrite. I want to thank you guys for coming out and sharing this with us this weekend. I don't know if there's anything else you want to read.
Just one thing.
Okay. Because I want to end it with a reading. No, so
let me go, then you end it.
Okay.
I think sponsorship is the jewel of this program. And it has what I described earlier in the weekend, a residual effect if you get active in sponsorship and you watch these transformations take place. You become a witness. You witness the regenerative power of God, or the Creator, or the Spirit of the universe, or the creative intelligence. It makes no difference what you refer to it as, for me. But you've witnessed something that's inexplicable. You cannot explain some of these transformations if you stick around and you take enough people through these 12 steps. And I was blessed in early recovery. I'll never forget it. I mean, my home group that I got sober at was a CA meeting on Friday night. And it was a large meeting. We'd circle up for the prayer at the end of the meeting. And my grand sponsor at that time, who later became my sponsor, this guy Dante, who's still in my life to this day, I remember we were circled up, and he was next to me, and he whispers in my ear. He said, "You see that new guy over there across the circle? He raised his hand. He's under 30 days, and he's looking for a sponsor. As soon as this prayer is over, you go over there and you talk to him." Mm-hmm. That's the type of sponsorship I had. And he pushed me over there, and I 12-stepped the guy and had a conversation with him. And that's how important sponsorship was. And I only had 5 months at the time. So I was thrown into it very quickly. And as a result, I discovered the good dope. I really did. And there's a reading I stumbled across about a year and a half ago that describes three groups of people. And so I'm going to read this, tell a quick story, turn it over to Mike, and we'll see which one of these groups do you want to be a part of. Each story I tell is going to have three groups in it. And so this is Moses said to his household, "Verily, beyond all doubt, I have seen a fire. I'll bring you tidings of it, or I will bring you a flaming brand that you may warm yourself." In every esoteric doctrine — esoteric is a tradition that's only available to a few people because they're the only ones that have the capacity to really investigate what we're talking about here — in every esoteric doctrine, there are references to three degrees of faith. In one mystical tradition, these three degrees are known as the lore of certainty, and a lore is like a story. The eye of certainty — with your eyes, you see it — and the truth of certainty is experienced. The difference between them is illustrated by taking the element fire to represent the divine truth. The lowest degree, that of the lore of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of the fire, divine truth, the magic that happens when you witness the transformation and sponsorship of someone you're taking through the steps. That belongs to one whose knowledge of this fire merely comes from hearing about it. You go to meetings and you hear about other people talking about their miraculous stories. Like those who received from Moses no more than tidings about the burning bush. The second degree, that of the eye of certainty, belongs to those who have knowledge of the fire or the divine truth or the magic of sponsorship. This comes from seeing the light. So you walk into your home group and you see some people sitting there going through the big book. You don't do it, but you get to see it. Like those who were shown a firebrand off in the distance. The highest degree, that of the truth of certainty, belongs to those whose knowledge of the fire comes from being burned in the fire. This ultimate possibility is represented in the above verse by the direct experience of those who are allowed to warm themselves in the fire. Be consumed in the fire. That's what I think sponsorship is. And I watch it all the time. I think Mike can probably say he's watched it. You can either hear about it, you can see it, or you can experience it. But it requires sacrifice, and it's an inconvenience at times. But it's beautiful. There are men I've sponsored, I said this earlier in the weekend, like when I'm in their presence or I see them, at some point I'm always drawn to the awareness. My awareness goes to God. So if the line in the back of the book on page 567 is true, that the essence of a spiritual experience is simply the awareness of a power greater than yourself, and you sponsor people and you stay active, years and years go by, so you've got a lot of people that are growing up in this family, and you spend time together in this family, and you're constantly having your awareness drawn to God. That's what this deal's about. This is an experience you do not want to miss. All of the work and the steps is for one specific reason: to make you a more effective sponsor. That's why we do this work. Our greatest liability becomes our greatest assets. Okay. Remember. Oh, the other part of the book I love. We've tapped a limitless load, and it will pay dividends if you mine it for the rest of your life and you insist on giving the entire product away. Right? Everything you find here, we want you to give it away as quickly as possible. Does not work out in the real world, right? When I was incarcerated, that wouldn't have worked in jail. All right. So, the last story I want to tell is if you take 100 people out of the rooms of CA and AA, you're going to discover something. And put them back in the bar. Let's put them back in the bar in the party scene. You're going to see a third of that group's going to walk into the bar. They're going to belly up to the bar, and they're going to drink just until they feel good, and they go home. Then you got this other third that's going to go to the bar. They're going to wallow in their drink, and they're going to cry in their little bag of cocaine that they're doing key bumps out of, and they're going to tell you this is all there is of alcohol, and this is all there is of cocaine. And then you got this other third, the mad dogs, right? They're going to go to the bar, and they're going to burn the bar to the ground. They're going to go burn the house party to the ground, and then they're going to end up in a crack house for a couple of days. Those are my people. That's my tribe, right? If you take those people out of the party scene in the bar, and you put them back in the rooms of AA and CA, it's sad, but that's how they work the steps. Right, you've got that one group of people, that one third, that goes to the meetings because they need their meeting, and God forbid they don't get their meeting because they got to feel good, and they suck everything they can. If they use the meetings like a spiritual filling station, and they go home. And then you got this other third that comes to our meetings and they cry in their big book, and they wallow in the room. And they want a specific answer to their specific problem that has nothing to do with spiritual growth. All right. And then you got the other third, the mad dogs. See, these are the ones that are spearheads for God's ever-advancing creation. They get their character assassinated a lot of the time. But they're out there, and they're soldiers on the front line. They're warriors. And they carry this message. And so what I ask you is, if you were a mad dog out there, why would you come in here and turn into a little ankle biter? All right, why are you going to come in here and turn into a little miniature poodle or something? If you're a rabid dog out there, a mad dog. And the question I leave you with is, are you attacking your recovery like you attacked a spike in the arm, a 20 rock on a stem, a drink at the bar, smoking meth, eating pills, whatever it is? Are you doing recovery like you did that? Are you willing to go to the same lengths? So I want to thank all of you for being here and being so attentive. It was an honor and a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
So in closing,
Anybody that has the workbook, this is a work of passion and love. And if you need help, it's basically to work with somebody. If you want to do some work, or you look at pieces of it, and you want help with it, my card is up here with my email and my phone number. You're more than welcome to give me a call. If you need sponsorship, and you want to do a piece of work, man or woman, give me a call. You're going to find other things in here besides all 12 steps mapped out for you. You got the 12-step principles, you got the four agreements, you got spiritual laws, and you got Steel on Steel, which is a accountability practice developed by Mark Houston. Alrighty? Give me a call. Alrighty? Anybody that didn't get a workbook and you'd like one, take my card. My email is on there. Email me. Let me know you'd like one, and I will send it to you. We'll work out the particulars. Alrighty? In closing, from A Tear and a Smile by Cahil Gibran, it says, conclusion. My spirit is to me a companion who comforts me when the days grow heavy upon me, who consoles me when the afflictions of life multiply. Who is not a companion to his spirit is an enemy to people. And he who sees not in himself a friend dies despairingly. For life springs from within a man and comes not from without him. I came to live in the splendor of love and the beauty of light. Behold me, then in life, people cannot separate me from my life. Should they put out my eyes, I would listen to the songs of love and the melodies of beauty and gladness. Were they to stop my ears, I would find joy in the caress of the breeze, compounded of beauty's fragrance and the sweet breaths of lovers. And if I am denied the ear, I will live with my spirit. For the spirit is the daughter of love and beauty. I came to be for all and in all. That which alone I do today shall be proclaimed in spirit. I'd like to thank you guys for this weekend. You've been as much to me as we have been to you. God bless you and God keep you. Thank you.